And welcome to the Big Gunners podcast. Thanks everybody for showing up today. So the Giants are still looking at this rumor about Matthew Stafford coming over to the Giants. And I don't know, you know, a lot of people here, this is the issue I have with all this. A lot of the podcasters or people you listen to, writers, this is the most pressing issue, obviously, with this team. Go back to the Indianapolis game where, you know, Brian Daboll comes out and says, hey, you see what happens when you get competent quarterback play? Drew Lock has a career game. We end up knocking Indianapolis out of the playoffs, probably a meaningless win that kept us from drafting number one overall. But we never want the number one overall pick mentally. But I guess some of the younger guys that could put up with that say it's, if you're going to lose all the way. To me, I look at it this way. I'm going to look at the first five players that I think are going to be a potential to be a Giant. But I think they're going to have to go after something in free agency. Now, if you make a deal for Matthew Stafford, according to what the reports, the Rams want the third pick in the draft. Under no circumstances should the Giants ever make that move. The 34th pick is something you want to think about as a possibility. But here's the factor, the X factor in this whole thing. Should the Giants make this move and give Stafford what he wants at $50 million and basically blow all their free agent money, they're saying that they're comfortable with the talent that we have in the locker room. And Brian Daboll and Joe Shane know that if they don't get the 7, 8, 9 wins, they are gone. The Maras will be tolerant if they see improvement to a point where they're closing the gap in the division with Dallas, Washington, and Philadelphia. That's the way I see it. You have to get you start with baby steps. But, you know, we go back to the 22 season where probably ruined us that we, you know, the first game when he went for two and got the team behind him and Barkley makes the run against I think they were the AFC champions, not the AFC champions, but they won the number one seed in the AFC, Tennessee, that year. And we end up coming out there and giving them all they want and end up winning. So I think that starts the whole thing where the team gains momentum, leads to the playoff season, leads to the setbacks. We probably won with insufficient talent, and we mask some of our problems. Now I look at it like it's the opposite. Now you make that move to save your job, because after the last 2 years, Daboll obviously could be on the chopping block. I like Brian Daboll. I like Joe Shane. Obviously, if you follow me and listen to me, you know how I feel about letting Barkley go to Philly, and obviously you saw what happened there. We had all that money, made the moves free agency, went on tele, went on HBO, did all this stuff, only to let Philly get a little bit bigger gap between us. Not a good situation. So to me right now, what I want to do is if we go after getting Matthew Stafford, we're going for 2 or 3 years. You can bring in a Dillon Gabriel or a Will Howard or a Tyler Shough or someone who is a really good player that might not be a top-end first-round pick in the second, third, or fourth round to come in and give competition to a guy like Stafford. But if you make that deal, you're saying right now that this is the answer. This is the guy who can get us to the potential wild card game, and you're trying to save your job. That's it in a nutshell. I believe that's the whole case for Matthew Stafford. Now, if you're sitting here to try and I heard somebody say this morning about, you know, that, oh, the Giants shouldn't draft or get a free agent or draft a quarterback early because the regime might not be around to help him get better. So he'll get it all new quarterback. Case in point, what's happening in Chicago. I look at it like get these quarterback, bring in a free agent that can play right away or at least have competition where if the kid has an unbelievable camp, if our number one pick or Jackson Dart, let's say we get, and he's having a great camp, you know, you might want to try him and play him. But if you make the move to get a prominent free agent player who you know that should be penciled in as a starter, you're saying this is the big answer. We're good enough for all other places, which I might disagree with. But I like that the front office and the team and upper management, the coaching staff are saying, hey, look, this is the last thing we needed. We needed a quarterback. We got neighbors, and we have our left tackle if he stays healthy, and we have a good pass rusher for you, and our linebackers are good, and our corners are getting better, and all that stuff. You can believe it. But if it goes that direction, that's where I think it goes. If you make a move like that to grab a player like Matthew Stafford. Now, attacking this draft, okay? I'm going to go after the first five picks of the draft player-wise. I don't know where they're going to fall. but the five best players and where I think they fit in with our team. And I'm going to start off with the two big quarterbacks. Okay, so you have Shedeur Sanders, who now we heard is not going to participate other than do interviews at the combine. Now, here's my thought. Yes, he goes out and does a lot of these videos. If you go on X, he's constantly doing something with Cam Ward. They're together throwing the ball around the place. That's all well and good. But are these players that good where they don't want to give the league a look? Now, I know this is something that's happening recently where a player is protecting their draft status by not doing something. To me, I don't understand why this is happening, because you already got money, NIL money. If you're protected draft status to go with the first or the fifth or the eighth pick, yeah, there's a little bit of money in there. But these guys have already made this money in the last few years in college. So it's not about the money to go first, eighth. Go out there, show us what you got, participate in the combine, do the throws, let us see whatever you have. That's why I like Jackson Dart. I've liked him the whole time. I'd rather have him over all these guys. But he's going to do all the participate full participation at the combine. So to me, that's what I want to see. I want to see a player who shows out there and wants to show everybody that he's good. Now, Jackson Dart probably has got a lot to gain on this. He was projected 2 months ago, was projected in the third round. I thought he was better all the time. He had a pretty good bowl game against Duke where he made that one crazy throw where he made a throw to going to his left. He threw the ball about 50 yards on a line. The guy who caught the ball just keeping his feet in bounds. That throw was incredible. And anybody can make that kind of throw. Is a player you have to seriously consider. But I think he was well coached under Lane Kiffin in Mississippi. I like the player, and I think he's a fit. The problem I'm hearing is that he might go late first round, which means either you trade up or you draft him at three. That's going to be the next case where you're going to see someone's going to say, if the first two quarterbacks go and the Giants really want one, and we get through the March 10th, I think that's the date where the free agency period starts up and we don't make a trade before the draft, you're going to see that the Giants are going to dig into this draft and do it. Now, the other rumor I'm hearing from Giant podcasters and bloggers is that Shedeur Sanders seems to be the Giants' choice. Well, okay, but you get Deion in the baggage. Good luck. You know, I like him as a player. I think he's good. Is he the answer to us? I don't know about this point. But, you know, Ward, I think I like a little bit better. I just like a little bit of his poise. He makes a little bit better decisions, but I like Shedeur Sanders too. So I don't think I'll be disappointed if they pick one of those two guys. I just don't know that they're the answer. I liked what I saw last year in the quarterback class. Obviously, if you listen to me, I touted Jaden Daniels from the beginning. And that's who, when you left the Hard Knocks, that's who Brian Daboll wanted. And you saw that. So that's my thought on the two quarterbacks that are early. Abdul Carter, you know, watched him live against Penn State. It was at the Penn State Notre Dame game. Was a force. Great player. We have Thibodeau and are going to re-sign him for a fifth year. Would I like a player like that? Yeah. If the two quarterbacks go, I think you consider him. You know, put him in with Burns and Lawrence, and then you have Carter. You're giving yourself a very formidable defensive front. You're hoping you get what Micah Parsons given Dallas out of the player. He's really good, very fast, good in a run. I can't miss. I mean, he's a player that's going to go pretty quick. I think he's gone by, you know, either when we pick or one pick after. I don't see him dropping out of the top four. You know, the next guy in this draft is the guy that I like, Travis Hunter. I think what he offers you is this. I think he's going to work out as a corner at the combine, not so much as catching passes. I like the idea of having that type of player to bring a little excitement to the fan base, to the team. The thing that's very more and more as we get on this media kick, social media kick, the podcasting, all the stuff that happens is more or less a lot of opinions out there. And everybody want the younger people all want a quarterback. I want the best player for the team. Travis Hunter to me seems like that player. If he's sitting there at three, I would say go get him. Then you have a chance, if there's a free agent quarterback out there, to say, I got Malik Nabers and Travis Hunter coming in. You might get a little bit of interest for a guy to come in and take a little less money that might want to win, that thinks maybe we got the pieces, likes the organization, and might take a chance with us. So that's the upside about taking Hunter to add to your offense and have him both ways. Now, you know we need a corner, so he fills that gap. Is he the top five corner in the draft? Possibly, maybe, probably so. But he's probably top five at both positions, and therefore makes him a real exciting player to get, you know, the idea of going both ways. Now, Do I want him 30 plays on each side, maybe, or 40 plays and maybe 20 as a receiver? Yeah. Use him as a third down receiver, start Slayton Robinson on first and second down, and then on third down, put him in third and eight. Maybe he can make a play, maybe two or three catches a game, and hopefully defending some passes and locking down a corner, locking down one of the other corner spots and stopping some, you know, top wide receivers. You got your pick, you know. So I'm a big Travis Hunter fan. That would be my guy. If we don't have to pull up and things change with Jackson Dart, that we don't have to go up high and get him. I still think that's a possibility that might happen. Then last is Mason Graham, who's a very interesting player. I listened to Daniel Jeremiah say the other day he was at a game last year where he wasn't sure what he was going to see out of Mason Graham and watched him in warmups and didn't look any different than any other player and got on the field. And then he said, oh, he's a player. You know, watching the highlights, you know, he got gaps. I'd love to get him next to Lawrence. I still think we have to address the right tackle spot. So if maybe the two quarterbacks are who they want, or, you know, and he's there, you know, maybe Mason Graham comes out if you really want to answer your line. So the front office has got a lot to do. Those are the top five players, in my opinion, that should go 1 through 5. You know, today I saw Mel Kiper said that, Sanders might fall to 7 to the Jets and had us taking Travis Hunter, which I wouldn't be upset about, but I just find that the fan base is going to go crazy if we let one of these two quarterbacks go and they're both there or one of them's there at 3. So we'll see. And I think if they're both sitting there at 3 and we have a choice, it means that Carter and Hunter are not. So that means it's easier that we might want to take them at that point or see what the quarterback market is phased. And if we don't already make that move to either grab a Stafford and put all our chips in, all chips in on Stafford, or you know, see that we've signed a free agent prior to the draft. So it's going to be very interesting next couple months. We'll see what happens. I saw that we have a running backs coach in Liddell Betts. Loved him as a back, very tough runner. I think he brings an interesting look as a guy who's done it before in the league to help our backs. I know he was at Iowa and did a great job with the Iowa backs. And I heard Tyrone Tracy very happy about him there. So if there's familiarity there, I think that's a great move. So now we're going to get into weekend of basketball and handicapping. So this was a very interesting week. So I was 0-for in college basketball, and I was 1,000% in the NBA, which is very, very weird. So we got stuck with Purdue on Sunday, up 12 at half, gets blown out in the second half. Couldn't even believe that. I think they lost the second half by like 27 or 30 points or some crazy number. Never in the game after the 10-minute mark when they were down 9 or 10. Never got close to covering. I thought that was a shocker. Like St. John's, a friend got me on Connecticut. I didn't give it out, but I was hesitant. But we saw that St. John's looks like they're a team right now. And if I could talk briefly about St. John's, I watched a little bit of that Rick Pitino show. It's on Vice. I have a friend that's close to Pitino and knows him and talks, and supposedly he's riding the wave right now. He's got the boosters behind him, all the excitement, but what he's got is a different look. If they get knocked down threes in the tournament, they're going to be a very tough out. And yesterday I saw on Fox Sports 1, I guess DraftKings or some number, that they're 30-1 to win the title. If you got a couple extra bucks, I would throw it on them right now, because I guarantee you, if they make a run and to win the Big East, they're going to be less than 10-1. So I think there's great value right now if you could find that 30-1 or even anything 20-1 or more on St. John's to win the whole thing. Now, I don't know that they will. Maybe they're saying the Big East isn't as a competitive conference as the SEC or ACC or Big Ten. But man alive, Connecticut's won 2 in a row from the Big East. So I'd say they manhandled them last week. Now, we know Connecticut's not the same team as what they've been in the last 2 years, but boy alive, with St. John's pretty good. So they get to the rim, they rebound, they're very good on-ball defending, good help-side defending. That's what Rick does. Rick would love to be a better three-point shooting team, so they were knocking down threes, and that's how they got up 18 after 17 at the half against UConn and win going away. So, you know, that's my little look at that conference. I also listened to a guy talk about Kentucky's team, who's missing two of their big, better players, and they'll be coming back for the tournament. So they look like their team to be up. I gave out Kentucky Saturday, thought 10 was too much, and then end up seeing it go to 12, see them up 12 early, thinking I'm okay, and end up losing by 13. Very, very interesting swings in these games, like all these games have. As a better, it gives you gray hair, or you can see, being around it. But yeah, it's just hard to bet these sports. But if you're going to do it, the information you got to kind of keep in the back of your head. It's one game, one loss, you move forward. But yeah, that was it. And then Sunday I put out Minnesota Timberwolves and get a weird game where OKC's up 19 in the second, early, like 8 minutes ago in the second quarter, and need a half court shot at the buzzer to be down two at the half. 24 point swing in that game in less than 10 minutes. It's just crazy, crazy swings. You wonder how it happens, but you know, guys get taken out of the game. They lose their mojo. Alexander, SGA, is one of the best players in the game right now. So much fun to watch. Very similar to Luka, where he doesn't look like he's going full speed. He's quicker than most, but gets anywhere he wants to go and get his shot off. Just a tremendous player. Gets a lot of assists, gets his team involved. OKC, the best record in basketball, I believe, right now. And they are going to be ruined real tough out. Best record in the West, I think. I think Cleveland might be ahead of them. So, yeah, last night they have a miserable game where they're down up 25 at the end of the late third quarter and end up losing last night in overtime, which was a complete shock to Minnesota. So very weird scenario. Caught a little bit of both games where OKC is a huge lead, comes back, doesn't get the cover. Minnesota covers, and they go on the road as an 11-point dog last night and get an outright win. So you're seeing a lot of these dogs, you know, hang in there and cover. In the NBA, there's a stat I think was going around at one point where – sure, it's not accurate now that 6 to 7.5 point favorites are losing outright at a 55% clip, which is insane. You know, so there's just some weird things that you pay attention to when you're going through, like, you know, you try to bring in the mental and psychological approach to this all. And then also you bring in the numbers part of it. You're seeing what you're seeing. Big game Saturday night, which was very interesting, was the Lakers go into Denver, a team that hadn't beaten in 3 years any significance, and beat them by 23. Luka shows up, LeBron shows up. I think maybe Denver was on their horse thinking, oh, just they made a trade, no Anthony Davis. You think Jokic is going to go out and do whatever he wants. It turns out he doesn't. And they end up getting beat by 23 at home. I thought that was a kind of surprise game. And then you like what you're seeing in Golden State. We're going to have fun with that game later when I pick it. But, the Warriors – are 5-1 under with Jimmy Butler and Draymond Green, who attacked the league in his performance and how the style of play and how the league is going on as far as on the court. And he comes out and says he thinks they're a contender now with Jimmy Butler, getting Jimmy Butler. And I think they're still in the play-in right now. So I think there's some excitement after the trade deadline. A lot of these guys moving around. I think you'll see it's be interesting time for the better as we get toward the playoff hunt and the teams are getting in the playoff, the play-in spots. And then you also have these bubble teams. You know, one of the things, the stats I heard, that for performance and ranked in the top 25, that the SEC could have the best conference in the history because of the Texas, Oklahoma coming in and what was happening. And one of the games I'm going to pick right now is Missouri is laying what I saw last night at 14 is now down to 12.5 against South Carolina. South Carolina, who I follow, has been struggling. Lamont Paris, who was the number coach of the year in the SEC now, finally gets his first SEC win, breaking a 13-game losing streak, beats Texas at home by 15. And I look at that game tonight and I say, you know what? That gives you a little bit of momentum. Missouri's very good, 17-1 at home. South Carolina's lost 6 of their losses in conference are by 5 points or less. I think they keep it close tonight. So I think one of the bets, you look at it, maybe take it up to 13, try to get it on that push number. Watch the line and where it moves, but that was a quick move down. So someone smart must be thinking the way I'm thinking. But I like South Carolina plus 12.5. And I'm going to stay in the SEC also for my second pick in college tonight. And I'm going to go with the Alabama Crimson Tide coming off that big win against Kentucky, laying 8 against Miss State. Big number, probably a little bit too big, but I'm going to lay it, figuring the line is right. The odds maker knows something I don't, so I'm not going to get scared off it. I'm going to lay 8 with Alabama tonight. Mark Sears and company at home after that big win against Kentucky, being down 12, going ahead and winning by 13. They get the W tonight, I think, and cover the 8. In the NBA tonight, very interesting game in Memphis, the Grizzlies and the Suns. So one of the things we watched last night as we picked, we're going up against Philly last night, was a very interesting game last night in Philly. So throughout the day, I'm looking at the game and I see Philly's 3-point favorite overnight on Sunday on a Monday against Chicago. Now I'm keying on Philly just because we all know that Joel Embiid is not performing at his level and expectations of Philly wanted him. You had Paul George, who was brought in to make a trade to make them a contender against Boston in the East. And you're out to a 20-35 record and you're struggling. And Philly fans are, what I heard last night is Philly fans are chanting for the Eagles at the Sixers games. So all this stuff makes the Philly fans, who were tough to begin with, even more ornery, probably not getting behind their team is the way the team feels. So all that can be a distraction when you're in there. So now I'm watching the game and I'm seeing, oh, it's down to 8-6. And then Philly gets it down to 3 in the first quarter. Ends up being an 8-point lead at the quarter. Ends up being 15 at the half. And ends up being 50 somewhere in the third or early fourth quarter. Ends up being a 32-point loss. And I'm saying to myself, I think this team is a go against. So I had it last night. Line goes to 4.5. I take 4.5 and 4. Then I see Nikola Vucevic is out, the center from the 20-10 guy for the Bulls. And the line goes to 6. But Embiid's out. So I'm like, all right, so the center's offset. But we'll see what happens. And they still get blown out as the line moved from 3 to 6. So all those people that made that move happen all think that Philly's better than what I think. And I think they get blown out. So I thought that was a very interesting result last night, watching Philly moving forward. So I also put in that category the Phoenix Suns. I was on with my guy, Jeff DeForest, on Bury Your Bookie, and I've talked about the Suns would struggle after the All-Star break. Kevin Durant was supposed to be traded. I looked at it like that. They thought that there was a little bit of friction between Durant and the ownership. The ownership wants to win now, didn't make the deal that they wanted to make. Supposedly it was a Beal for Butler talk about he was going to come into Phoenix. All that tough stuff doesn't happen. So you have a frustrated owner, a frustrated superstar leading into this. So now we look at their week and review. So I get off them, but I liked them. I San Antonio because of Wembanyama injury, and then the line goes to 3.5, and San Antonio wins by double digits. Then Saturday, I give out +5.5 and 5 with Chicago. I get very lucky there with a shot at the buzzer to cover by 4. So that's 2. And a buddy of mine tries to get me on Phoenix. He doesn't like what I'm saying. He's always kind of contradicting me, and which is all okay. Gamblers talk like this all the time. Whatever I say is going to go the other way. So be it. We'll see if we can get him. As long as we stay 500 or better, he'll struggle. But the point he's liking Phoenix, so he scares me off the game. But I'm watching the game and took a halftime bet on Toronto +6.5 and was down when the game got close. So I thought I was a loser, and then they end up blowing them out, covering not only that, but they covered the money line in the second half, and they win by 15. So you're worried a little bit about Phoenix. So tonight, one of the games is played. Memphis looked pretty impressive in a loss, a half-point cover Sunday night against Cleveland. Memphis is in at home, and Phoenix is laying 8. So now they're figuring out, here's where Phoenix has a problem. This is a scary game. Eventually the lines come around, statistics come around. They're going to make the lines too big, and Phoenix will start covering. It's a mathematical equation that happens. I'm going to take one more shot against the Suns tonight and go with Memphis -8 and see where the mental state is of them. If they get a blowout tonight, I think you're probably looking at a pack-in for the Suns later in the year. I'm going to say Memphis gets the cover -8 tonight. And then the last game of the board tonight is a weird game. Golden State Warriors, red hot. But, man, do I hate laying 17 in the NBA. Last night, there was an interesting game in hockey where you laid 550 with Winnipeg, and the Sharks were winning up until 26 seconds to go and lose 2-1 in overtime, where they give up the tying goal in the final 26 and tie it 1-1 and lose 2-1 in overtime. So the 5-1 guy gets bailed out. The goal line buyers, -1.5, -2.5, for the losers. But we were talking about this game yesterday, like how in an NHL game can you lay 550 and you almost steal one at +350? With the San Jose Sharks last night at 2-1. But Charlotte Hornets +17 is my play tonight. Now, I like teams coming off a blowout. We did it last night. So there's this old adage years ago when a team is on a back-to-back and they lose by 15 or more, they usually get the number the next night. Happened Sunday night with the Wizards, lost by 20 at Orlando, come back and get an outright win as a 3.5-point underdog against the Nets on Monday. Here we got the same thing happening again with Charlotte. Charlotte gets blown out by 42, gets outscored by 26 in the fourth quarter, 42-16. No reason for them to even be in this game. Golden State's riding high. I'm going to take the 17 and take my shot with the Charlotte Hornets. Plus 17 tonight, try to get a squeeze, lose by 12 or 13. And, you know, Hornets are miserable, but we're happy. So those four plays tonight, South Carolina now plus 12.5. Alabama plus 8. The Grizzlies minus 8 against Phoenix. And the blowout comeback the next night. I'm going to take the big number and Charlotte plus 17 against Golden State. So we got four plays tonight. Good luck to everybody. 2-2, 3-1, we like. Love to get 4-0. Very difficult to do. Big gunner now. Giants next week. A little bit more gambling. We'll see you Thursday on Bury Your Bookie. Go Big Blue.